You're listening to the Reasonable Faith Virtual Chapter Podcast. In this podcast, you'll hear the audio from one of our live discussions. Please join the discussion at reasonablefaithvirtual.org. I guess I would just say, like, the another thing that I think a lot of people get into that makes discussions unproductive is being too quick to share your own thoughts and too slow to listen to the other person. I think that that happens a lot in conversation where it's you're almost waiting for your next opportunity to speak, which is obviously terrible. No matter how smart what you have to say is, if the person doesn't like you because you're being rude to them, then they're not going to listen to you. And so if you're going to have any kind of productive conversation, you've got to listen to them, because otherwise nobody's going to learn from that. I think on both sides, Christians and non-Christians, we tend towards that extreme where we're not really listening to the other side. We're kind of just being bombastic and presenting our own ideas.
Hi, I did have one question about standards of evidence. It seemed like a good argument. One question I had was how it seems like it's based on how likely the piece of evidence is to prove a conclusion, if I'm saying that correctly. It's like if the piece of evidence or if the substance is at least, say, 51% likely to prove or disprove a proposition, then it's considered evidence. If I'm understanding that right, how does establishing that percentage, for example, or obviously it doesn't have to be a strict percentage, how do we establish that in itself? Does that make sense? I feel like I didn't word that very well.
Sure. So one strategy that I've used in the past is sort of the I'd almost call it like a pathway strategy, if that makes sense. And so let me use like a die as an example, right? Suppose that somebody rolled the die and it came up six, 20 times in a row, right? We would say, well, that's very unlikely. And it might even be evidence that the die is fixed or it's some sort of, trick die or something like that. Now, why would we say that? Well, the reason we would probably say that is because the number of ways or the number of paths, you might say, to get not 20 sixes in a row, there's a lot more paths to get not 20 sixes in a row than there is to get 20 sixes in a row, right? And so that would be sort of one general strategy, is to try to point out, look, there's a lot of different ways that it could be. And you might use that in like fine tuning, for example, one of the ways they establish the chances. There's like a whole lot of different ways that the constants could be where it's life prohibiting, versus a comparatively narrow number of ways for it to be life permitting. And so that'd be one way to sort of establish a sort of ratio. The fingerprints on the murder weapon might be an example. Like if the defendant were a gun shop owner, right? Then you might say, well, look, there's a lot of ways his fingers could be on the weapon. The criminal could have stolen or bought the weapon from his store, or stolen and bought it from one of his customers, and his fingerprints might still be on it. And so you might say, all right, well, what you've done then to undermine that piece of evidence is you've introduced a whole class of ways that his fingerprints could be on the murder weapon. And so it would sort of raise the probability that his fingerprints are on the weapon if he's innocent. And so that would be sort of your strategy. I don't think you're going to get like mathematical precision, especially on something like testimony. You're not going to get like a mathematical precision. And so some of it's going to be subjective in how incredulous you are. Some people are going to be more or less incredulous. But hopefully, if you're presenting evidence, hopefully it'll be persuasive. But it's going to kind of be on a case by case, I think, on how persuasive that is and how many other pathways there might be. So to give the apostles' testimony example, you'd point out things like the persecution faced by the early church, as a reduction of the number of ways, right? So if the apostles were celebrities, like current rich televangelists, then that might increase the number of ways that they would be testifying to the resurrection, and yet the resurrection didn't happen because they got rich off of it, let's say. So then greed might be a motive. But if you show, well, there's no motive of greed, well, then you're reducing the number of ways that they would be giving that testimony, and yet the resurrection would be false. And so that's how I would approach it as far as trying to show. And even like the question, like, well, why would they say that it happened if it didn't? That's sort of asking, okay, well, what are the ways on the other side? So does that answer your question at all?
Yeah, no, that clears it up a lot. Thank you.
Yep, absolutely. And depending on the person, I mean, I had one person tell me that they accepted that the beginning of the universe happened and that it's logically impossible that it could happen without God. They accepted that. Maybe you don't accept that, but this person accepted that. And they said, yeah, but maybe it happened anyway. Right. And so if they're willing to accept logical impossibility as just as good as the God explanation, they're going to say, well, it's 50-50 between God and just logical impossibilities can happen. And so you can see how I can't force them to evaluate that evidence differently. That's sort of up to them.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other thoughts or challenges maybe to that standard or ideas on what is productive in conversation, or perhaps conversations you've had that went well or went poorly and what you learned from it?
Hey, I have a question. I took down some notes. I just wanted to make sure I got this, what you said, correct. I wrote down, what counts as evidence is not what is persuasive to you. Did I write that down correctly?
Yeah, that's right. So it may be the case, for example, people can have a lot of different psychological reasons for accepting or rejecting evidence.
Right.
And so, in fact, philosopher Daniel Speaks gives a great example, I think, of the disconnect between what you're persuaded to believe and what is backed up by the evidence. And he gives the example of suppose that there's a husband and his wife is kidnapped, okay? And she's gone for years, and let's say that the kidnapper was originally sending some ransom notes, but then finally sent a note saying, look, I've killed her because you're getting too close, or the police are getting too close, whatever the case may be. I've killed her and she's gone. And another couple of years pass. And then out of the blue, the husband gets a letter that says, this is your wife. I'm in captivity, but I'm able to get letters out to you. And has some sort of message for him, right? Now, the husband in that scenario, due to perhaps desperation or due to love or whatever the case may be, he would possibly, hope against hope and be persuaded that he's still able to have this conversation with his wife, even though all of the evidence is against it. And the evidence of a letter, I mean, it could be anybody, it could be a hoax, it could be some rando on the internet who heard about the story, if it's been in the news, that sort of thing. There's a lot of ways that this would be fabricated, especially given this backstory of the amount of time and the letter saying that she was killed, and all that kind of stuff. And so what Daniel Speaks uses this to show is how, and his point was you can have faith even without evidence. But the point is that the psychological persuasion is different from what the evidence is. And the reason why I think that's important is we don't want to use as a standard for what gets admitted into evidence that which persuades me, because that which persuades me may or may not be associated with the evidence.
I think this is where most of my conversations have kind of went astray. Mm-hmm. Because in a lot of the conversations that I've had, I think the presumption for whoever it is that I'm talking to is that it needs to be persuasive to them. And I kind of feel like I've said this before to someone, it kind of feels like someone saying okay, you think you're a comedian, make me laugh, what I'm saying? It's like I have to give them something that's persuasive to them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen a few of Matt Dillahunty's debates, and he sort of takes that tactic, and it almost tries to turn the conversation into whatever the debate topic is. It's no longer does God exist. It's now just, can Matt Dilhunty be persuaded that God exists, which is a very different question. And so, yeah, I mean, overcoming that obviously is going to be difficult because who knows what the reasons are that the person might be resistant. So in my,
if you have any links to articles or anything that I can look into this a little bit further.
Sure. So basically, if you look at Bayes' theorem, that would be one that you just Google that, you'll be able to see the actual formula. And then the formula that I gave was derived from it. And you can also, I'll see if I can get a link later, but there's a YouTube channel, The Analytic Christian, and he does a discussion with Thomas Bogardus. So if you search on YouTube for Thomas Bogardus, Analytic Christian, you'll get a really good, thorough explanation of Bayes' theorem and evidence.
Okay, Analytic Christian. I have his channel. I'll check that out. Thank you very much.
Yeah. The title of the channel is misleading, or the title of that video is misleading because it's something like psychophysical harmony or something like that. It's actually talking about the argument from consciousness. Well, the title says it's about the argument from consciousness, but I'd say half or better of the video doesn't touch on that at all. It just touches on Bayes' theorem and evidence and the probabilities and how it all works. So
sounds great. Yep. I appreciate that.
Yeah. No problem. Any other thoughts or comments, concerns, or stories about discussions you've had? I know it's kind of a difficult topic to to have thoughts on because I'm not really giving arguments for a conclusion here. I'm just sort of sharing my experiences, but all right. Well, one thing I will do since we've got the Bigo in here. Bigo, if you wouldn't mind, he's involved with an Equip platform, where there's a lot more conversations going on between Christians and non-Christians, skeptics and non-skeptics. And it's also a platform where you can learn more about apologetics and whatnot. So Bigo, maybe you can kind of give us a brief explanation of that platform before we close out.
On the spot. I can do that. I can be totally caught off guard by this. No big deal.
You had no idea I was going to ask for that, but
no. But fortunately, it's really a cool platform, so it's pretty easy to talk about. Hopefully, most of the people in here are at least familiar it exists. But if not, it's I think the site. Sorry, I don't know the site off the top of my head because I have it bookmarked. But I think it's knowwhyyoubelieve.com. I think it's com and not org, but I could be wrong about that. But I think if you type in like reasonable faith equip or something like that, or you go to the reasonable faith site, you can find it pretty easy. Basically, what it is some people at reasonable faith have taken Dr. William Lane Craig's work, and I guess you could say they've made courses out of it. They've kind of distilled down some of his information into like, well, some of the courses are what I would call bite-sized. Maybe bite-size would justify what I'm trying to explain. But some of the courses are literally like, they're called 100 level courses. So it's, you look at some of the animated videos by Reasonable Faith with Dr. Craig's information on it, and then you read a couple of the more simple articles or Q&As that are on the site, and you take a couple of simple quizzes, and it's just to kind of get you more familiar with the nuts and bolts of some of the natural theology arguments. And then there's some 200 level and then even a 300 level, I think now, courses for deeper topics like God's relation to time, abstract objects, that kind of stuff. So all of the stuff that Dr. Craig has touched on in his work, if you've seen him in interviews and read some of his more, maybe some of his less popular but more in-depth books, there's all kinds of stuff on there now. And there's plans to add 10 more courses, you know, over the next couple of years. So there's always more stuff being added. But anyways, I think it's really helpful to brush up on stuff. Even if you already heard this stuff before, they've compiled a lot of different kinds of resources in the courses. So you're not just watching videos or just reading stuff. You're kind of hitting the highlights of everything Dr. Craig does. Anyways, that's a long-winded explanation just to say it's courses based on Dr. Craig's work, and it's all free. You don't have to pay anything to do it. And then specifically why I guess Matt asked me to talk about it is because I'm not the main moderator, but I am a moderator of the forums part of the site. And so we recently moved the original Reasonable Faith forums from the old site onto the Equip platform. So if you go into the groups, it's called groups on the site. If you go into the groups section of the site, of the Equip site, there's a Reasonable Faith forum. And then there's also individual forums for each class if you just want to focus on one topic. But there's a more general forum called the, you know, Reasonable Faith forum. And yeah, there's all kinds of discussion going on in there. It's a lot of people moved from the old site over to it. So I was telling Matt in the chat earlier, there's a lot of people there who are not Christians. The site obviously is geared towards people who are already Christians, but anyone's welcome to go through the courses or come onto the forums and stuff. But yeah, it is Know Why You Believe, so obviously it's geared towards believers. But there's a lot of people from all kinds of backgrounds on the general forums. So I was telling Matt, we're in need of Christians who are able to articulate what they believe and why they believe it. If you're interested in more of these conversations and can't get enough on all of the Discord servers you probably engage with, come over to Equip. But sorry, that's like a 30-minute presentation on the website, Matt. But
no, that's great. It is a .org. So it's knowwhyyoubelieve.org.
Okay.
Is the site. All right. Well, if nobody else has comments on discussions, then we'll kind of make it an early night. Again, next month, I haven't set the event date yet. It's usually in the back half of the month, but we'll be discussing Stephen Wolford and Zach Ardern's debate and looking at what we can learn from that. But thank you all for coming, and I hope you have a great evening. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Reasonable Faith Virtual Chapter Podcast. If you'd like to join the discussion, please join us at reasonablefaithvirtual.org.